Hello, hello, lovely listeners.
All of you ghouls and goblins.
And everything in between. Welcome to Across the Veil with Zelda.
And Emma.
Happy birthday, Emma!
Thank you, although technically at the time of recording it is not yet my birthday. But it will have been my birthday the day before when this episode comes out. October 7th.
Our favorite spooky bitch is born in Halloween month, so it's kismet.
It's another chicken and the egg conundrum. Did my birthday in October influence me into becoming spooky? Or was I meant to be born in October because I was innately spooky?
Or is it because your parents let you play in a graveyard as a child? The fox in the chicken coop. Is that the real metaphor we're going for here?
Maybe.
Did you have Halloween themed birthdays?
Oh yeah. My birthday's in October. What else am I gonna theme my parties with? So like, obviously Halloween is my favorite season. And so I'd have those Halloween birthday parties every year. But what's funnier than that is that I truly believed in my heart as a kid that Halloween costumes had to be scary. Mm-hmm. Like they had to. And it was one day of the year where you could wear a scary costume. Nobody could judge you for it. And so turns out a lot of kids didn't actually think that way. And it was just me. But so they're just like these photos of me from my birthday parties and from like our like school Halloween days where everyone else is dressed like there's like a girl as a cheerleader, there's someone as, I don't know, like Snoopy or some shit. And then there's me dressed as a fucking demon. Dead serious, no smile. There's this one where I dressed up as this demonic girl and I had like bat wings, but then I also like painted my skin like even paler than I am, like dark lipstick, and then I was holding the most horrifying little doll. And in the photo, it's like our entire grade and everyone else is smiling and I'm dead center, just fully in character, holding this doll and staring straight at the camera like I'm about to attack.
No, you said there's a bit and I'm committing to the bit. And the bit is being the spookiest motherfucker in this clown house.
Hell yeah, baby. One year I was Wednesday Addams and two other girls also dressed up as Wednesday Addams.
Kill them. Become the alpha.
Literally. I made them walk with me, but I was the one in character once again. And I didn't speak to anyone. Mm-hmm. I just marched around with, once again, no smile, almost zero expression on my face.
Iconic behavior.
Oh yeah, I slayed it that year. And then in later life, I dressed up as Slutty Wednesday Addams.
That's how you know that you're in college.
Mm-hmm. I was wearing a costume that was so short that it basically could have been the one I wore as a kid. Zelda has seen. So how did you dress as a kid though?
The thing about me as a child is I had a lot of very big ideas. Mm-hmm. And for about 3 years straight, I dressed as the same thing for Halloween. I was, The thing was called Secret Agent Bunny, a character of my own creation. I went to the Halloween store with my mom and we found those Playboy bunny ears and I grew attached to them.
Deeply unsurprising.
So they had like the purple rim and the lace in the center and I was like, oh my god, no, I'm gonna be Secret Agent Bunny. So I wore like all black and then I do like forward rolls because I was very into gymnastics. So people would be like, what are you? And I'm like, I'm Secret Agent Bunny. And then I do like a gymnastics trick. 3 years, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade.
That's honestly impressive. See, that's character commitment.
To a character I created myself and gave a theme song to.
Were you a Playboy bunny or were you a furry? Which were you closer to?
I was a child, Emma. I was a child back when anthropomorphic characters were not sexualized.
My bad.
But yeah, no, you and I have had some really great couples Halloween costumes. I mean, a few years back, we were Glinda and Elphaba, the OG pink and black dressing characters.
Hell yeah. Witchy.
But also, one has a lot of glitter.
And one couldn't fully commit to making her skin green, so she put green eyeshadow as highlighter. And it kind of worked.
Everyone in the party instantly knew who we were.
I should have painted myself green.
Commit to the bit, Emma.
Regrets. So many regrets.
And then this past year, we were a vampire and her victim. So obviously, me being the blonde in this friendship, I was the victim.
Mm-hmm. We dumped like a gallon of blood on her in my shower.
Yep. I couldn't hug people at the party. I was like, oh, hi, nice to see you. I'm wet.
She was absolutely covered. Meanwhile, I was like, I'll just do a little bit of tasteful blood going down from my mouth.
Well, you had vampire fangs.
Oh, yeah. I'm a vampire almost every year lately. Last year, I was Slutty Wednesday and a vampire. And I think the year before that, I was also Slutty Wednesday and a vampire. Because sometimes, like, when it works, it works. But speaking of lady vampires,
ooh,
that's today's topic. The Bavanshi.
Bavanchi.
Which is impossible to spell. Looking at what the name is, you would never know how to say it unless you're actually Scottish. And it's also not a banshee. So the Pontianak was also kind of like, I remember you saying she was a regional version of a vampire to some mm-hmm. people, or at least in some people's opinions. Well, the same is for the Bavanchi. She's like the Scottish cultural regional variation of a vampire. And Scotland was actually considered like a hotspot for vampirism before Eastern Europe, like Romania, ever was. So let me give you the tea on the Bavanchi. God, I hope I'm saying it right. If I'm saying it wrong, I'm going to be saying it like this for the rest of the episode, so bear with me. The Bavanchi, who is also sometimes called the White Woman of the Highlands, is the oldest form of vampire in Scotland. They are only female, and bear similarities to succubi and other vampires, though they're generally thought to be a type of fae. And fairies were very important in Scottish folklore and held a lot of prominence in their culture and everyday life.
I mean, kind of lesson number one you learn about the fae is don't fuck with them.
So there was a prominent Scottish folklorist and journalist from the late 19th and early 20th centuries called Donald Alexander Mackenzie, whose name, like Loki, if anybody listening watches Outlander, like, reminds me of Jamie Fraser's name. James Alexander Malcolm Mackenzie Fraser.
Oh, and she did that whole thing.
I'm not embarrassed to admit it. I fucking love Outlander. But Donald Alexander Mackenzie wrote quite a lot about Bavanchis. So according to Mackenzie, they take the form of a woman wearing a long green dress. And green is the color of magic and fairies in Scottish folklore. So much so that fairies were believed to not want humans to wear anything green. Aside from their supernatural beauty, they appear to be human, as the key to their identity is concealed underneath their dresses, where they have deer hooves instead of feet.
Oh!
Bavanchis only stalk their prey in nature, and are mainly found within the highland regions of Scotland, which is a large, remote, mountainous, forested, rural, secluded area encompassing northwest Scotland. Mackenzie writes that they roamed the mountain paths and the low roads networking across the highland, where they preyed on unsuspecting travelers and hunters. They do bear many similarities to traditional vampires. They can't tolerate sunlight and sleep in buried coffins till nightfall, when they awake to hunt in darkness for human blood before returning to their graves at sunrise. They're also telepathic and shapeshifters, though they prefer to turn into ravens or crows instead of bats. However, they don't have fangs, and the way they kill is quite different and actually somewhat similar to the Pontianak. Bavanchis only rise from their grave to kill and feed once a year. While they sometimes travel alone, they normally hunt the countryside in small packs to prey on their preferred victims, young men, usually hunters, as they were drawn to the smell of their bloodied clothes. So, like, they're kind of like a girl gang, basically.
Girl gang that's kind of got, like, shark rules.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my god, Shark Week! If it's once a year, the OG Shark Week!
Feminist Shark Week. Legend has it, like fairies, Bavanchis would use their beauty to lure in or seduce their prey, and then invite them to dance. The charmed men would dance and dance, and once they were off their guard, the Bavanchi attacks. Their long fingernails would turn into talons, so they can puncture the throats of their victims and suck out the blood from the open wound. Once the victims were drained of blood, the Bavanchi makes her escape by shape-shifting into a raven or crow, so they can return to their graves and sleep until the next year's hunt.
That kind of sounds like the ideal, but I'm not going to lie, when you said they're seducing these men dancing around, all I could hear is like, that new Megan Thee Stallion song, that's a whap, whap, whap. That's the seduction song. I mean, what else are you gonna seduce these gentlemen travelers with? What I find fascinating is that they have like one kind of home to go back to. Like they have a coffin that's buried in the ground that they go back to, which is very in line with kind of original depictions of vampires kind of back in the 1930s, 1910s. If you've ever seen the original Nosferatu, that's on Amazon Prime. You can get it for free. It's one of my favorite scenes in the movie because it makes me laugh every goddamn time. But this guy, in order to travel, he's got to carry his coffin around with him. like it's the most ridiculous scene in a movie, and I'm sure the rest of the movie is supposed to be spooky, but like it's this guy with a coffin and he's running. He's going for it.
He's straight up booking it.
So in more modern iterations of vampires, especially in film tropes, that's been left to the wayside. So, I mean, these ladies are old, right? This is old tradition. So it's very interesting that kind of the first official vampire film draws from the fact that they do have to travel with their coffins.
She can only sleep in her coffin. She has to go back to it. I don't think they would ever travel with it. Mm-hmm. But they also only go out once a year, so.
No, but that's very, like, traditional it depictions very of traditional. Vampirism. The Bavanchis have definitely informed modern interpretations.
100%. I mean, like, with modern interpretations of, like, there's, like, the Dracula stories, where they always have, like, the beautiful vampires, you know, who are just, like, seductive, sexy women. Mm-hmm. But those, in those depictions, those vampires are usually just following after Dracula or whoever the head honcho vampire is, rather than actually going off on their own when these ladies are hunting in the wilderness just for themselves and mostly going after men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, boss ass bitch.
It's a nice little twist. They are making men their victims, and they, well, let me tell you how invulnerable they are.
Yes.
So a man attacked by Bavanchi will not turn into any type of vampire. Any woman attacked or killed by Bavanchi will return as one of them. They have one weakness, iron. It is the only substance able to kill or harm them. It would seem that even sunlight doesn't kill them. They just have an aversion to it. Or they're smart enough to not get caught in the daytime, so no one ever writes about them getting burned to a crisp. But because of their aversion to iron, they also dislike horses because of the iron in horseshoes. The only way to stop a Bavanchi is by repelling or killing them using iron, or building a stone cairn over their graves to prevent them from rising, essentially trapping them. And the stone cairn does seem to be the most effective way of stopping them.
Pussy way to do it.
I know, it's such a pussy way.
Come on.
Literally, like, they have one night. They just have one night where they want to have fun. Give them that one night. They snooze for the rest of the
time. Girls just wanna have blood.
Oh, girls just wanna have
blood. God, I love Cindy Lauper. Bavanchi Lauper.
Bavanchi Lauper. So I have a few stories from folklore about them that I want to tell you.
I would love to hear stories.
So many hunters, I'm assuming from the olden days when people like full-heartedly believed in fae, and the fae were such an important part of Highlander life, have claimed to be approached by a Bavanchi while out in the woods after dark. But the most commonly told account was recorded by our friend Donald Alexander Mackenzie. One night, a group of four hunters stopped at a remote hut to take refuge from the dangerous Highland wilderness. In their merriment, after a good day's hunt, one of the men began to sing while the other three danced. While dancing and singing, the men spoke of how they wished they had women to dance with. Seconds later, there was a knock at the door. Four beautiful women stood in the doorway and asked the men if they might join them. Thrilled by their luck, the men invited the women into the hut. Three of the women partnered up with the dancing men, while the fourth sat by the singer. Soon, the dancing became frenzied and violent, and the singer noticed drops of blood falling from his companions. Realizing what was happening, the singer sprinted out of the hut. The fourth woman tore after him, but stopped once she reached the horses. Realizing she wouldn't go near the animals, the singer hid with the horses all night while the woman watched and waited. When morning came, the woman disappeared. Cautiously, the man ventured back into the hut. To his horror, he found all three of his friends lying dead in a pool of gore, their throats slit open and bodies completely drained of blood.
Damn.
Uh-oh.
The moral of the story is homosexuality is an option. is what I gleaned from that. But no, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. Like that the horses are what stopped her.
A folklorist called Catherine Briggs suggested that the singer was most likely protected by the iron on the horse's shoes. Mm-hmm. And that's how he survived. So it was literally just that. And so I have another story. And it's like the second most popular story of Bavanchis. And it's pretty similar. But in this one, the four hunters and a dog took refuge in a cave. Three of the hunters wished that their wives were with them, while the fourth, a man named McPhee, said he prefers for his wife to stay at home. Moments later, three beautiful women enter the cave and invite the men to dance, which, of course, they eagerly accepted.
Let's see where this is going.
McPhee watched in terror as the three women killed and devoured his friends, but he found himself spared. Once the killing stopped, his dog drove the women out of the cave and back into the night.
So was he spared because the power of love, my wife?
So there's the recurring theme in the story is that Bavanshis appear just after men wish for a female companionship, which I read apparently is connected to a traditional Scottish belief that making a wish at night without invoking God's protection would cause the wish to be granted in a horrible manner.
Ooh.
And similar to that, I've also read, and I personally believe, that it has to do with sexuality, since a lot of vampires and folklore in general are associated with straying off the path of quote-unquote righteousness and being seduced. So essentially falling prey to lust.
The moral, the pure, whatever.
Which is also associated with blood. So when you don't wish for, like, premarital sex or whatever, you're not falling prey to lust, so you get spared. So it's like a story of keeping people pure. Yeah. And vampires are also often a symbol of otherness. So it's like a warning against social deviance, and people are punished for not conforming to societal norms. And that's particularly apparent in Victorian vampire literature. And since these stories are older than the Victorian era, obviously, vampire stories have been keeping this warning for a long time. But, like, it's also especially apparent when the vampires are women, like the Bavanshis, and are super powerful and badass, but are representative of a man's descent into sin, basically. So it's really interesting in terms of a historical narrative.
No, it's super fascinating. I mean, I've got a whole thesis in my back pocket about kind of also how vampires represent, they're supposed to be beautiful, but also they're dead. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot like consumption, which was a huge blood disease back in those days where you'd cough blood.
Yeah.
So I think that's also a very interesting kind of avenue into, because it was, you have very pale skin and very red lips and glassy eyes, which are all kind of things that are associated.
Your skin is ice cold.
Like associated with vampires. But yeah, no, vampires just in society, the place they hold in folklore is very fascinating because they are a story.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure the first American vampire, I think her name was Mercy Brown, was a woman who was dying of consumption. And people were freaking out so much that they started a whole myth about her being a vampire, essentially.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's so much interesting stuff about vampires. They're such crazy kooks.
They're kind of like dragons. They're in almost every culture. So
they're in everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's definitely like a big part of the human psyche that does fear or is enchanted by the kind of like what happens life after death, but like what's the price you have to pay?
Exactly. But I like the Bavanshi a lot because they're just ladies hanging out together and killing men.
Club going up on a once a year Thursday.
Best night of the year.
Let's dance with these boys and get the best dinner ever.
Hell yeah. Literally, it's like it's the best ladies night of all time. And they do kill women occasionally, but it's only so they add more ladies to their group.
That's awesome.
I think it's really interesting that they run in packs.
The pack thing is,
because that's not something I've heard of vampires doing a lot.
No, they're mostly solitary.
I think it's probably because of the fae connection and like the dancing, because there's a lot of dancing in fae folklore.
Yeah, very court. It's very fae court is kind of like what they do for fun is they make humans dance until they die, like until their feet are bloody nubs. Is that that's such like a fun fey prank to play on people who wander into fairy circles.
Dancing. So the Bavanshi is the oldest type of vampire in Scotland, but there have been tons of sightings and accounts of vampires in Scotland throughout the ages, but also in more modern history too. And since it's Halloween and spooky season, I wanted to share one more story with everyone about a Scottish vampire.
Yes, of course, let's go.
And it's also a murder mystery a little bit.
Yes!
Going back to murders again. Me going, what's up with me on murders? I don't know. So the 1915 murder of medical student Andrew Muir in Inverleith, Edinburgh, is still unsolved to this very day, and the circumstances surrounding his death have made many believe he was killed by a vampire. So around the time of his death, it was believed Andrew had been investigating the paranormal activity within the William Bryan House Hotel. At this time, several staff and visitors had reportedly seen an evil apparition while in the building that watched their every move. And many members of the staff had left their employment and guests had fled from the hotel in it out of fear. So acting on a dare one night from his friends, Andrew asked the owners if it would be possible for him to hold an all-night vigil in the room with the most activity. They agreed to his weird request and left him with a bell, though, which he was told to ring if he needed anything. A few hours into the seance, the bell began to chime loudly, followed by one blood-curdling scream. When the owners entered the room, they found Andrew's lifeless body slumped over, and some accounts state that he had two bleeding puncture wounds in his neck. Some believe that the murder was the work of the apparition, who they claim is the late William Bryan, aka the owner of the house. previous owner. He's dead. But others believe that Brian was not a ghost, and instead was a vampire, because it's said that on his death, his body was removed by undertakers who were not known to the area. He left strict instructions that he was to be buried 40 feet down in a secured coffin.
That's a lot of feet.
And no one has any idea why he asked for that.
Is that like an arbitrary number, or is that something in Christianity that...
I think it's just fucking deep. While I was doing research about modern Scottish vampires, I found one of the most famous accounts of vampire activity in Scotland that was it was in the 1950s, about the Gorbals vampire. And I actually want to do a little mini episode on it this month because it is so strange and deserves more than like a 2-minute retelling of it. It is one of the weirdest things I've ever heard. The entire town just goes crazy.
That's incredible. And you can expect more mini episodes from Emma and I, because happy Spooktober, happy Halloween month. We're going to give you some extra content because we love y'all, but we also love the creepy.
Little bit of bonus. Yeah. We love you and we love Halloween, which is every day this month.
Yeah. It's Halloween month. It's not a day. Also, Halloween this year is going to be on a full moon.
Not that it matters because we can't do anything. I guess we could hold a vigil in our backyards.
Hold a vigil in your backyards. Drink some red wine or blood. We won't judge you. And watch some spooky movies. That's, you know, you can still get into the spirit or the spirits for Halloween.
Fuck with a Ouija board if you want. Howl.
Howl at the moon. That's always very cathartic.
Howl at the moon. That's what you should do. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to dress like probably a vampire because I already have my vampire teeth and pretend I'm a Vivanshi and howl at the moon and incorporate werewolves and vampires into one beautiful amalgamation.
I'm going to be Princess Carolyn from BoJack Horseman. I've already been painting the dress.
It's so good.
She says costume queen and I must.
She says costumed to the gods. You absolutely must. But that's what I've got this week. What are we getting into for the next spooky episode, Zelda?
So next week, it's very exciting. I'm going to talk to you guys, instead of something that could be or might be, I'm going to talk to you about a woman who was. So I'll be telling y'all about Helen Duncan, who many say was the last real witch in Scotland. She was a medium and she performed seances and was the very last person to be convicted with witchcraft. So get ready for this spooky, spooky lady.
Love me a good spooky lady. But that is all the spooky ladies we have for this week until the next one. So we will see you next time across the veil.